laughing at the heat, put plants in the bed, but the phone's tapped anyway. Maggie says the man is dead, it must bust an early man. Orders from the DA, look out, kid, don't matter what you did. But walk on your tiptoes, don't tie no bows. Better stay away from those that carry around a fire hose. Keep a clean nose, wash your plain clothes. You don't need a weatherman to know which way the wind blows. Get sick, get well, hang around the inkwell, hang bell, hard to tell if anything is gonna tell. Try hard, get boxed, get back, ride rail, get jailed, jump bail, join the army if you fail. Look out, kid, you're gonna get hit by losers, cheaters, six-time users, hanging around the theaters. Girl by the whirlpools, looking for a new fool, don't follow leaders, or watch your parking meters. Get born, keep warm, short pants, romance. Learn to dance, get dressed, get blessed. Try to be a success. Please her, please him. Buy gifts, don't steal, don't live. 20 years of schooling and they put you on the day shift. Look out, kid, they keep it all hid. Better jump down a manhole, light yourself a candle. Don't wear sandals, try to forge the scandal. Don't want to be a bum, you better chew gum. The pump don't work cause the vandals took the handle.
And I bet people know what that one was. That was Uncle Bob Dylan. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norse, and upcoming is Bathrop Spears Broadsides, February 4th, 2010 show. In the studio right now, I'm waiting for the arrival of a couple of guests, and while I'm doing that, I will kind of pick up from the last show. Every Sunday I do an earlier show or a later show, depending on which you're looking at it from, which side. And we were reviewing, actually I was playing a tape from the street where the police were, according to the testimony I got from the two witnesses, if I understand this correctly, they were, a woman objected to a guy's being harassed for medical marijuana. And as a consequence, she was handcuffed and taken away in a squad car and charged with resisting arrest. That provoked me to some concern, and I voiced that concern on the streets. You can hear my earlier part of the concern if you go back to www.huffsantacruz.org and click on the last show, which I believe was the 31st of January. If you go to the website, you can find it. But this is what happened next. Again, is sort of more of the same, but I don't know. It's not a bad thing to raise your voice when police are engaging in abusive behavior on the streets and let people know what's going on. At least that's my perspective.
For the police department and the Downtown Association rule. Any comment, Officer Winston?
I'm in jail right now.
What's that?
I'll be
in
jail.
Yes, I don't know her personally, but she gave her name earlier.
Not much.
And the woman is trying to say something. She's trying to get your attention, I think. In the squad car. And Officer Winston is speaking civilly to the individual he originally contacted with a citation and making some notes, it appears.
The individual Winston originally contacted apparently had to do with a marijuana concern, either smoking or possessing marijuana. This is the city, you know, that is so liberal on marijuana. And rather than take away that person, he was taking away the woman who objected to his behavior, and now, as I said, he's being civil to the person he originally contacted.
The woman is kind of shouting through the window so she can be heard.
That's right.
And that's the story. It's now about 2:20 on Sunday afternoon here in front of close to the Del Mar Theater, and Winston's squad car is now... He's getting into his car to take off.
I can't do that.
That's what's happening.
Talking
talking with Jim here. You said on Saturday night, that was, I guess, last night.
Yeah.
In front of
Friday night.
In front of Santa Cruz Gifts and Jewelry, which is next to the Del Mar Theater.
There were several kids sitting there, and the cops told them, the big, heavy-set cop, tall, heavy, really heavy-set.
Officer Forbes, perhaps?
I guess.
I don't know.
He told them to move, and all of them moved with these two girls, and then he started giving them a bunch of shit, and they started giving him some stuff, and they arrested him, screaming and yelling.
And all they were doing was sitting next to the building.
Sitting there, yeah.
Now, was the store open?
No, it was closed. It was actually late at night.
So they weren't blocking anything?
No, it was late at night, and they were setting up against it, too, where they weren't bothering nobody.
Did you say there was a complaint?
I don't know. He pulled up and just saw him, and he went over there. But they say that anyway when there isn't. They just make it up, you know, say, we got to complain about this.
Do you have any actual evidence that that's ever happened? I heard that claim before. It could well be true, but is it true?
Have you ever seen the actual complaint when they say something? You know?
Only when you stand for the ticket. I got a ticket on Wednesday for singing songs downtown, and they complain. I actually got a ticket from a citizen. The police officer told me to stop singing, and I said, I've already stopped singing. They have to leave, and I said, no, I don't have to leave. I said, well, we'll sing more quietly, and the police officer said, okay, but then went over and took a citizen's arrest from a guy nearby who did it anyway. So that does happen, and so it's, you know, it's not...
I thought they made that stuff up, saying they had a complaint.
I don't know that they do. I think they probably are close... They actually, I don't know if they orchestrate the complaints, but they encourage people to believe that they can easily make them and that the police will respond.
And do you have a right to know who's complaining against you? Can you?
If you get a ticket, you do,
you
for
do?
Sure.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But then you have to get the ticket. Usually most people don't want to stand around for the tickets.
Right. Yeah, there you go. Well, that's all. They were just screaming and yelling. They put one in the car, and then the other girl stood in front of a police car and wouldn't move, so the car couldn't pull out, and then they arrested her.
How many police involved?
Two cop cars showed up, and two all together. Two
this was all because the police insisted on these two women moving from their seated position.
Yeah, they were just sitting
there. Were they intoxicated, or were they...
No, not at all. They were just sitting there. You know, they're eating, actually, you know. And they're homeless girls. They have backpacks and stuff. I've seen them around before. I haven't seen them since then, though. One of them has a bright red backpack with a metal frame.
Okay, I don't quite recognize that. Maybe, Aaron.
Yeah, you've seen them around up here a lot. I haven't seen them since then, though. And that's basically it. I mean, it's just anything you do in this. It was really late at night, too. I mean, there's, you know, I don't see how anybody could be complaining about that.
So it wasn't, for example, a noise complaint?
No, nothing.
They weren't.
Nothing.
When did you arrive at this point? How did you see this?
I was already standing here when it happened.
No. So you didn't see any disturbance prior to the police arriving?
None. Actually, the cop, he pulled up, and it was like the second look or something, because he was going this way, and he saw him, and he stood down here and told him to move, and three or four of the guys and stuff got up and left. You know, and
the girls did not.
The two girls.
Women did not.
Yeah, and they had something.
The women have got more balls than the men.
It's really true. It's very, very true. Mm-hmm. Yeah, most of the guys are pretty wimpy out here. You know?
Well, I have to say that it looks like Officer Winston and Officer Albert are talking to some citizen. The car hasn't moved it like I thought it was going to. It still contains the woman who's accused of interfering with an officer because she was criticizing Winston's citation of a guy for possession of marijuana who didn't have a medical marijuana car, but said he has a doctor's recommendation. And I think they're hugging each other now through the window of the car.
A boyfriend?
I think may well be. Not sure. I'm going to go up and take another look. Thank you, Jim. Any final comments about how this went down?
Bullshit. That's it.
Thanks. Again, we've been talking with...
Chris.
What's your first name?
Chris.
Thanks, Chris. And that's Peter, the saxophonist, calling after the departing squad car.
The gal?
Yeah, the gal.
How many saw this off for free radio?
I think in the tail end.
What'd you see, Peter?
What I heard, I asked the guy who was with her, okay? Mm-hmm. And he says they caught him rolling a joint, okay? And she came up and said, why are you bothering him?
Mm-hmm.
And she got taken away, and I guess they cut him the slack they were originally going to cut him or whatever, apparently.
He said he got a ticket.
Okay, he got a ticket, but the general gist is she questioned authority, and apparently the police have trouble with someone who may be legitimately questioning authority.
How much of the actual interaction between her and the cop did you see?
I only saw parts of it, and everything seemed good-natured, which is to say, she seemed to know how to say, excuse me. You know, but she remained confident in the face of their intimidation. But I really question the behavior of the police. I've seen them, like, lose it completely when someone gets out of camcorder so their actions are under scrutiny, that they might be on YouTube. And I've seen the police department lose all sense of reason. And that was, like, absurd. They wrote a ticket for someone sitting on a planter over here.
Recently?
This is a ways back. But my conclusion is that when they are called into question, they often, in their insecurity, lose all sense of reason and forget how to do a professional job. And it's very discouraging to see that kind of thing happening amongst the less mature officers on the force.
You're not talking about Officer Winston, are you?
I'm not naming names.
He was the officer yesterday.
I know that there are some officers who do a good job and pride themselves on being professional, and there are others who seem not to understand what that means. And I think that there could be a stronger culture of professionalism in the police department.
Thank you, Peter. And you're out here a bit. You keep your eye on things. You play a saxophone down there.
I do appreciate when the police department makes the best effort and does a good job. And they sometimes do that. And that's cool. And I appreciate the need for them. I also think they need to understand that they should be under public scrutiny. And camcorders that show up on YouTube are part of the citizen's right to scrutinize the police department. And they should not. There should be nothing wrong with having a camcorder on the avenue and scrutinizing the police department.
Here, here. Thank you, Peter. Did you see anything that happened? Or?
I just saw my friend Courtney Rose being arrested. I was wondering why. I want to go say hi to her at the police station. She's such a sweet kid, you know.
What is her name?
Her name? Courtney Rose.
And what about, what did you say? You saw her after she was arrested? Or?
Oh, I just saw her after she was arrested, yeah. She looked like she was doing okay. Was she
in handcuffs for the time you saw her?
She was actually in handcuffs behind her back, so you couldn't see that. But
did you hear any of the dialogue with the police officer?
Not much, not at all. I figured I better not interfere.
I see you have a guitar on your back.
Yeah, I figured I better not interfere because they were not enjoying anyone, like, poking their head in there.
Sounds like just my kind of situation, but as you're a guitarist downtown?
Yes, yes. Uh-huh.
What's your name?
Roy Lopez.
Of course. And Roy, have you...
Welcome to downtown.
Yes. Have you had any problems with police yourself?
Oh, only getting ticketed for sitting on the sidewalk.
Well, that's certainly illegal, you know.
Well, it's...
In most places.
Bad for your butt, too. I mean, it's reliable.
Well, there you are. They're helping your health.
Yeah, that's right.
So what's your problem?
Well, I just don't... I appreciate the help. I don't like the $300.
Helping you out. Far out.
$300 ticket.
And did you two see anything?
No, we just showed up.
Very suspicious.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks again.
Terrible.
So we're talking with...
Oh, you're kidding me. I'm Kerbugger Chris. No, that can't be...
And Chris, we're...
And before we go into Kerbugger Chris and more of the street interviews, this is all from, I think it's January 10th, Sunday, and... Well, that'll be later. In the studio with me, I do have two guests, Anita Henry, who's a Measure K commissioner and MedX worker and founder and follower and leader and goodness gracious operator. And, you're on mic three. There you go. And if you want, you're welcome to put on your earphones if you want to hear this on the air, or you can listen to it as it comes out of the speaker, and that's also possible. And also in the studio with me is... online columnist, medical marijuana advocate, longtime blogger, and police department punching bag, Craig Canada. How you doing, Craig?
Hi there.
And these two are been fighting for the rights of medical marijuana patients for many a moon in different ways. And indeed, most recently, there were two city council meetings that happened. One was the meeting last Tuesday. Regular meeting of the city council, which I actually have on tape here, and I'm about to play, which has to do with the actual discussion of a medical marijuana dispensary ban or moratorium, a new dispensary moratorium, essentially expanding a four-month ban on applications for medical marijuana dispensaries. And then the Thursday before that, there was one of the rare meetings of the seldom-cited Measure K Commission, which is the commission concerned with making marijuana the lowest enforcement priority. That's not just medical marijuana. That's all marijuana for consenting adults in private. The theory being that the police have better things to do. We're all adults here, and let's dump the reefer madness as soon as possible, although let's not have the balls to actually stand up and do it locally, except because the city council didn't. It was done by initiative way back in 2006, and we're still waiting for the... an actual measure to happen in 2010 that would actually legalize it, and we've heard some discussion of that on the air. Apparently there are four initiatives circulating. One has probably made the ballot, and the other three aren't likely to, but the one that's made the ballot has a number of problems that actually Craig Canada here has pointed out in past shows. But I want to kind of huddle with my guests here to find out what they'd like to do. Do you feel like hearing the discussion at City Council and commenting on it? Would you like to be interviewed or talk about issues first? And by the way, if anybody's listening in and they want to call in, we do have an open phone line at 427-3772. H31 is the area code, 831-427-3772. What is your preference, folks? We are very democratic here.
Well, what motivated me to come in this evening, Robert, is we just had our semi-annual meeting of the Measure K Oversight Committee. It was actually postponed from December, but we met last week. And the only reason we really meet is to approve a semi-annual report that City Council staff is mandated to provide to the council based on the work we've done and the happenings with the police over the past 6 months. And it's been very frustrating for me. You know, Robert, that this measure passed in 2006, and it passed overwhelmingly.
Let me interrupt you, because I guess what you're saying that we would like, should we talk about this now? And
well, that's the reason I came in.
Yeah, why don't we put the Measure K measure, let's discuss that first, and then we can talk about the subsequent meeting of City Council to essentially ban for another 4 months medical marijuana dispensaries, and if you want, you're welcome to talk about that,
right,
too.
Right, because it's all related.
You, Craig, or?
It's fine.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's all
the
related.
Measure K committee, of course, is the DFANG committee that you can read about it on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, I think. I don't know if you've written about it there, but...
No, I haven't been writing in post.
I haven't. I know Craig also has written about it, not necessarily at ndbay.org, but I think on your own website and also on examiner.com, is that right?
Yeah, I've written a number of articles about it.
So for those who want to know, essentially it's a fraudulent committee which doesn't, as far as I'm concerned, and you can give your opinions, of course, about this, I believe it's a fraudulent committee that was originally opposed by the city attorney even before the city council refused to put it on to pass it as a committee under its own steam. It refused to put the initiative on the ballot.
The lawsuit was filed.
And after the initiative passed, it refused to appoint members, and then they filed a lawsuit against it, and they got a deal with that friendly attorney, Ben Rice, who seems to be often very concerned with, being a good guy and, making deals with the city. Ben, I hate to say this, that's what I feel was done in this case. And then the chair and the vice chair resigned because there was no way to examine the police reports. The police department didn't give them. They told you, go make Public Records Act requests. And I don't know if you or any other members have done that.
Well, it's a very interesting history. As I was saying, Robert, it passed in 2006. I was the first member appointed. I was appointed April 20th of 2007. We've met, I believe, 7 times since the committee got together.
And Ada, can I interrupt you just a minute?
Absolutely.
What was the percentage it passed?
I believe it was 64% of the voters voted to pass. And in essence, what it is, it's lowest law enforcement priority for adult use of cannabis. This has nothing to do with medical use. This is just... A push towards legalization.
And it's in private. You can't... We're not,
right,
we're
and it's in private. It's
property,
not out in public.
Property.
Right. So like I said, we've met like 7 times now. The only things that have ever happened, because nobody is ever in the audience, the other committee members actually were talking about either disbanding the committee or only meeting once a year, because nobody comes to the committee meeting except you, Robert. You come, and your name was actually even mentioned. We met on a Thursday night.
Well, when they
night.
Don't lock me out.
Well,
I
the reason you weren't there
happens.
Is you were doing your show.
I was.
We met on a Thursday.
They scheduled their meeting on
right.
Thursday instead of on Monday.
It's supposed to have been Monday, right?
Right, right. And also the last time I was there, chair, what's her name? Mary Beth Gecky?
Yes, Gecky.
Somebody locked the door. I couldn't get in. And by the time I got in, they'd finished oral communications. It was kind of amusing. That was the same meeting. I think they lost the tape of the meeting.
Absolutely.
Coincidentally, I luckily recorded most of it and played it on the air. But, I mean, it actually is kind of a joke because, again, what the committee is supposed to do is
they're sabotage. It's self-sabotaging. Every step, they self-sabotage. And every 6 months when they vote to approve the semi-annual report, of which is contained only the statistics, which I'd like to tell you what some of them are.
And I want to hear about that. But, again, these are statistics where you haven't actually been able to look at the police reports and
absolutely.
Say, you know, because the issue is, did the police department keep marijuana the lowest enforcement priority, or did they violate this ordinance? And that's what this is supposed to be. And, of course, there's no oversight to find that out because this was excluded by an agreement between Ben Rice and City Attorney John Barisone way back in 2007.
And that's the irony of it. We're the oversight committee, but there's nothing to oversee except that semi-annual report.
And no objections from any other committee member.
Other than myself.
Other than yourself. There was another person who voted against the report last June.
That was
June.
David, and he is not on the committee anymore.
I see. Well, there might be a reason for that.
He's not there. And as you mentioned, the chair and the co-chair resigned after the first year because
of this.
Because
they thought it was a useless
committee. It's just a bunch of bullshit, to be honest.
Uh-huh.
It's bullshit. There's absolutely nothing happening. One thing I'd like to say is every time we've met, I've made an issue about them not giving us anything qualitative, no words, no language, no story, only the numbers, the number of calls for, this is as it relates to marijuana, only they give us the number of calls for service and the number of citations and arrests that were made in that six-month period. And then they just want us, and every 6 months, nothing is Measure K applicable. No money is spent on it, and everything is hunky-dory in the city. Nobody seems to have a problem. What I take issue with is, Robert, all I have to do is listen to your show and your interviews on the street to hear the stories from people that have been harassed, have had their cannabis taken away from them. People are getting citations because this semi-annual report, which is from May 1st through the end of October of 2009, 160 citations and arrests were issued for marijuana, yet none of them were Measure K applicable. So I've been fighting all along for them to give us an example, give us a story, give us the language of a person, of what you decided on your own. The police decide whether it's Measure K applicable or not. They're overseeing themselves. And they did finally, this seventh meeting every 6 months, did give us one example.
How nice of them.
They were very nice. And it's footnoted. There's a footnote on the semi-annual report. And can I read it?
Yeah, sure.
It's a little bit of a paragraph, but this is one person's story. There was one case that the police department flagged for the city attorney to review. The city attorney determined that the citation was appropriately issued. In this case, a man sitting in the passenger seat of a car in the parking lot behind Kinko's was approached by an officer after the officer smelled marijuana emanating from an open window. The man answered the officer's question and told him he had been smoking marijuana. He answered in the affirmative, and the officer took possession of a baggie containing 0.2 grams of marijuana, which is 2/10 of a gram. I mean, I can't tell you what a small amount that is. I mean, that isn't even a little bongful. The man was cited for the misdemeanor offense of possession of marijuana and released at the scene. The case was scrutinized for Measure K applicability because the man was in a private parking lot at the time of the citation. However, Measure K applicability turns on the matter of the police officer's priorities, with marijuana enforcement on private property to be the lowest. The matter of the police officer's priorities, the parking lot and adjacent area behind Kinko's has been a frequent scene of drug dealing, car burglaries, and much criminal activity, and one where police department has actively dedicated resources to address community public safety. On the night that the citation was issued, the police officer was specifically assigned to that area of the city to address the ongoing criminal activity. Thus, that officer's priority that night was to patrol that specific part of the city and address all criminal activity. At the time of this contact, there was no other observable criminal conduct taking place in this patrol vicinity, and hence no activity that the officer was required to address as a high priority. Accordingly, as confirmed by the city attorney, the citation was not Measure K applicable. This makes no sense to me, Robert.
Well, no, it makes sense, but what it means that regardless of whether it's on private property or public property,
they decided
to come up with an excuse. I mean, it is true, I suppose, and we could say it's on. Not only is it on public property, but it's in public. It's not in a residence. It's outdoors. You know, somebody is smoking within 1,000 feet of a school.
In an enclosed vehicle.
In an enclosed vehicle.
As a passenger. Not driving.
So was the window open, did they say?
Yeah, it was opened a little, and
right.
the smoke came out.
You ever tried to smoke in a closed car?
I mean, it's, you know.
Perhaps, I don't know, but not much of a smoker. But so. You know, what's interesting, though, is if this officer was assigned to look for illegal activity.
Criminal
activity. It seems to me his responsibility would be to keep on looking and not to pay much attention to this. And I guess the real question we should also ask ourselves if we were really investigating this case was how long did the officer spend on this case? Like, how many minutes did he spend? Did he call for backup on this whole case? And none of these issues are mentioned in this report, pro or con. In other words, how much energy was expended on this?
And you know what's interesting, too? It kind of contradicts their whole...
Was medical marijuana involved? I know it's not about medical marijuana, but
you're absolutely right. That was
issue.
A thought of mine also.
Why isn't that mentioned? Did he ask for a card? You know, there's nothing about that. And, of course, if you were able to see the reports, you would at least get some indication of what went down. But the police department isn't showing you the reports, although I have to say, you didn't ask for that report either. Did you, Anita?
No, I didn't, Robert.
Bad girl. Go ahead.
I wanted to say they also claimed that there were no Measure K applicable citations or arrests, and no city money was spent. Now, if no city money was spent, how much time did they spend reviewing this with the city attorney and the city manager and the police? I mean, they're giving me an example.
Well, that's what Candy Jackson, your fellow commissioner, would say is, you see, that's why this commission is useless, because they're spending so much time reviewing a fine police department that doesn't need to be overseen. And they have to spend a lot of time with these issues when, in fact, they should be allowed to do their job.
Robert, point is, I need bodies to come to these meetings. We're not going to meet again until June, and before June, I actually got permission to contact the Sentinel, the Good Times, and the Santa Cruz Weekly to announce that we are meeting, because every 6 months when we meet, there's nobody in the audience, and the other committee members feel it's just a waste of time. The police are doing just fine. There's no problem in town, but I hear stories, you hear stories, people are living the stories. And I need people to come out. I need people to care.
And I would suggest that, you know, this commission isn't worth diddly squat. But really what's worth something is your interest, Anita, and yours, Craig, and that of anybody else's in fighting this drug prohibition nonsense, this really lethal and toxic drug prohibition nonsense that continues to, you know, weave its way into Santa Cruz City politics. And we're going to be hearing, of course, from the Santa Cruz City Council and its latest rubber stamp, reefer madness,
Jim Crow laws,
and Jim Crow laws, insofar as they you know impact people of color more than those who are
I don't mean that specifically as far as the racial impact of the arrest and all. Of course, that is a factor, Robert. But these laws are just like Jim Crow laws in the South, white and black water fountains, the no medicating on premises, the setbacks, 1,000 foot or 500 from schools and parks and churches. You know, Scott Emler is a Methodist minister. I mean, you know, that's...
Explain that a bit, because most people may not know who Scott Emler is.
Scott Emler had a club here in Santa Cruz for a short while.
Cedar Street Club.
Yeah, and he...
Maple Street Club.
Yeah, he opened the West...
He's in Hollywood now, I believe.
Yeah, but he opened the West Hollywood Club, I think it was 1996, with, I think, Jeff Yablin. And they were raided, and it was a huge thing. Big. Lots of media.
And your point is that the laws that particularly focus on marijuana are unlike laws that, say, focus on pharmaceuticals or laws that focus even on tobacco, far more toxic, or alcohol, that this is an unusually hysterical and toxic approach to essentially justify, this would be what I would say, it justifies, and I don't know if you would agree, you know, a whole structure of criminalization and repression that's been going on for decades.
Well, yeah, if you look in Santa Cruz, for instance, they've essentially banished the dispensaries to the colored section of town out there in the godforsaken fringes in Harvey West. I mean, you know.
Well, they may be colored, but they're pretty white out there in the Harvey West.
Well, I'm using that term metaphorically, Robert.
Yeah, as if they're on the fringes of society. I mean, they're in neighborhoods where people don't want to go. They're industrial areas.
When the Pacific Coast Cooperative opened up across from the metro.
Oh, speaking of which.
They were shut down.
But, yeah, where I grew up, they had, white sections of town and colored sections of town. And it's the same thing here. But you're talking about Pacific Coast Co-op.
Yes.
Do you know what happened to Michael Clifford?
Well, he was the guy who ran it at that time.
Yes.
Tell us what happened.
I found out 2 days ago that all 7 felonies were dismissed on 8th December 09.
So what were the felonies he was charged with?
It was very interesting. I was told most of them were 11-550s, I think, or perhaps 11-350s.
Which means, to those of us who don't know what
this is. I don't know. I didn't look it up. You can look it up right there on the computer. Type in H&S 11-550 and see what comes up.
They were very serious, though, and they really disrupted his life.
It was 7 felonies, and he was probably also conspiracy to distribute. And so they were all dismissed, and I was supposed to testify on his behalf. And so the reason I found out about... What was that?
The number again.
Look up 11-550 and see what it says. And if that's not it, it's 11-350. But,
a total salvage vehicles?
No, health and safety code. But, let's see. Okay, where was I? The whole reason that I found out about this is I was supposed to testify.
Possession of a controlled substance. Yeah.
It was possession was what it was?
Yeah, that's what this says anyway.
So it was 7. It was 7 felonies anyway that were dismissed. I was told that Bob Lee dismissed the case for lack of evidence, and
we're talking about the crime was opening up. What was dispensing marijuana from a shop? Or?
Well, if you remember, the first time that I met you was in front of that place, and I don't remember the guy's name who had it at the time. And this was when Lisa was trying to get her license, and they denied him his. What was his name?
I don't remember his name, but I remember he was upstairs right on in the storefront on Pacific Avenue.
Yeah, and the fact is it was an ideal place for a dispensary. It was right across the street from the Central Bus Depot. You know, and it had an elevator and a restroom for people that were mobility challenged. It wasn't out on the godforsaken fringes of Harvey West where you have to sit for an hour at a bus stop like a sitting duck. You know, and it takes an hour to get there if you're lucky. Generally, most parts of town, it takes 2 buses. I'm really angry about the prejudice in this town.
Now I know that there was an originally they tried to open it up. Within a month the planning department shut it down.
Right.
But this was then somebody else tried to reopen the same place or?
Well, yeah, it was, you know, I don't know the details, but it could have been the same people that opened it up as an organization for patients. Anyway, they got a business license, but they didn't say they were dispensing marijuana, and they operated quietly for several years. They were there. They were my caregiver for a couple of years, and they were only people in this town as far as dispensaries that treated me like a human being, and I could get a decent ounce from them for $200. And, you know, Michael.
I believe it wasn't until there was a story in the Good Times. There was actually a story about him and the good work he was doing, and then he was shut down.
Was that it? I know that the downtown host moved in about 6 months before all of this. But anyway, the reason I found out about it was because I was supposed to testify on his behalf. And so I called him up and I said, what's happening with this? Because I was expecting to get a subpoena, and it never came. And he said the cases were dismissed, and so then I was trying to think, well, you know, what can I ask him while I've got him on the phone? And I asked him about what specifically charges were dismissed, and he said they had discarded the files, and he couldn't tell me exactly, but most of them were 11-550s.
Well, what I've got here is Pot Raid Targets Patient Advocacy Group in the infamous Santa Cruz Urinal, or the Sentinel, as I like to...
Is that the one with the mugshots?
There is a mugshot. County and federal authorities raided a Pacific Avenue medical marijuana organization Thursday, saying the group, which claims to be a counseling service, is nothing more than a cover-up for an interstate marijuana cultivation and sales operation.
All seven felonies were dismissed for lack of evidence.
You should be happy they don't say marijuana ring. Like they used
and
to
you
ring.
Should know that if there was a chance in hell that they could have convicted, Bob Lee would have pressed.
They were actually selling marijuana out of there as a storefront. Sergeant Steve Carney, the sheriff's office, said. Now, does this mean only the sheriffs were involved, not the SCPD? That's kind of interesting, because this is marijuana on a private, in a private area. So apparently, the sheriffs don't feel bound by this measure, because this is on private property, and it's marijuana.
It's another way for them to work
and
around.
Sending adults. I guess it's being sold. So, and now,
well, you know, I saw Officer Hoppe stand, I think more than once when I visited, Officer Hoppe was standing outside with his bicycle on the second floor outside.
Does Measure K involve sales? It doesn't involve sales. It involves possession, sales,
everything,
cultivation,
yeah,
transportation.
Absolutely.
So therefore, this activity is Measure K. This should have been part of your report.
Well, what's the date on that?
The date on this is September 19th, 2009.
Oh.
So it looks like your commission just missed something there, and you voted for the report, you traitor.
Well, actually, this was the first semi-annual report that I voted to approve, and I'm going to tell you why, Robert.
Go ahead.
I have no fucking idea. I'm just tired of being the only one that says, I'm not going to approve the report because you're not giving me what I want, when they present me with a footnote of one example and go, here, we gave you what you want. I'm just, you know, I'm tired of it. I'm not going to resign, but I'm determined to get bodies at our next meeting. Mm-hmm. And if people are listening, you know, you don't have to necessarily call in if you don't want to, but please take an interest in what we're talking about.
I encourage people to call you soon and before a June meeting, because frankly, I don't think it's going to matter if 100 bodies come to the next meeting. What really matters is if they show up next week and start demanding that the sheriff's office and the DA and the city council stop targeting people for marijuana use, possession, cultivation.
And the city police specifically.
And then the county, for that matter. The city police, but also the sheriffs.
Well, this is a city. This is Santa Cruz City. This isn't a county. Measure K is not a county.
Let me tell you a story, folks.
But it has to do with what goes on in the county, right?
We only get the statistics from the city.
Now, is that what's specifically provided for by
Yeah, it's only a city ordinance, Robert. It's not the county.
So, in other words, if the city wants to fuck with you,
they can.
In the county.
Absolutely. That's why I said there's always a way they work. It's hysterical.
Well, so the reality is, if we want to do something about it, we can't rely on these established, you know, even voter-established groups that have been not just neutered, but they can work around anyway. There needs to be a whole new perspective on it. Craig, you were going to say something.
Well, yeah, you were talking about targeting people, you know. There's people in this town. When I was waiting for Anita the other day, I was smoking a joint out front, sitting on a bench, and this woman came storming down the street with her cell phone. I think she's calling the police saying she could smell marijuana everywhere and she was suffocating. I was just totally astonished. It was the most amazing thing.
She needed a hug, probably.
Well, if anybody needed a joint, it was that woman, let me tell you. But
well, so there really is a hysterical perspective on marijuana. I mean, you see it with, although I've got to look over their literature and listen to what read what they're writing online more carefully. But the group Take Back Santa Cruz, which you may have been reading about in the paper, which is holding, you know,
they look scary to me.
Yeah, to me too. They're holding these meetings downtown, supposedly against stabbings and beatings and shootings, which we all...
Robert, they actually were meeting in the courtyard Thursday night while my Measure K Oversight Committee was sitting in the council chambers having our meeting.
Was this the same group? It was something about women.
Yeah, it was Take Back the Night, and they had tables and candles.
Well, remember, Take Back the Night is a different group than Take Back Santa Cruz. Take Back the Night has to do with women's right to be able to be safe at night.
Right.
Santa Cruz has to do with concerns about the downtown being unsafe because it's a drug den, because there's stabbings and beatings. It doesn't have to do with gender so much. And there were two events that were being run that same day. One was at the city council. There was a march, I think, from the county building to the city council by Commissioner for the Prevention of Violence Against Women, the city commission, and Take Back the Night. And the other was this thing up at the 7-Eleven at Chestnut and Laurel by
right.
Take Back Santa Cruz,
right.
Which had to do with, you know, they say they're interested in, you know, fighting violence downtown and establishing a presence.
Well,
of
a woman was killed in 7-Eleven, but
right.
Let's remember,
that was the other 7-Eleven.
She was also from Seaside, and so was the fellow that killed her.
And it was a domestic deal. You know, it had to do with something to that effect. And that doesn't make it any better. But then you start getting screaming about wanting to go after people smoking marijuana. Again, I don't know that they are specifically saying this, but when they use the word drug den, as you, for example, you'll see a video online which talks about the drug dens in the Poganip, or the drug dens down by the cemetery. And indeed, there are probably some needles. And then
a den has a floor and a roof and walls.
Right, although if you're homeless, you may not have that particular advantage. And there might be outdoor drug dens.
I mean, they're just heartless. They're heartless. And when you think back to Rotkin talking about this Office of Compassionate Use that the city was going to open and administer, this was all behind riding on Wham's coattails. Because at that time, all the politicians were loving the publicity. They were freaking loving it. There was CNN. Right? There was headline news. Valerie was going
up. I ran into Mayor Crone, or former Mayor Chris Crone, yesterday at the farmer's market. And, you know, he and I have our chats, even though I'm suing him in court for, you know, having me arrested at city council for doing this. You know, for making a mock Nazi salute when he cut off a speaker. But the fact of the matter is, I pointed out to him that he was part of the vote that helped establish the very restrictive laws around dispensaries in 2000 that it, for 5 years, excluded all medical marijuana dispensaries, all of them, period. I mean, Wham was not a medical marijuana dispensary. It was a collective that only a small number of select people could be a part of. And you and other marijuana advocates like Andrea Tischler and Theodore Carey were excluded from the process of developing that law in 2000. Instead, only the corrals were called in, and this very restrictive law was passed, which shut down two clubs immediately, one after another. The same management with Kate Wells.
Correct.
Was shut down. You know, and it was, you've had marijuana prohibitionists masquerading as liberals in Santa Cruz, masquerading as progressives. Would you agree with that, Craig? What do you think?
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I was just, Wham! I put it. You know, they have an ad on the back of the San Francisco Weekly. It looks like they've had one for quite some time now.
You mean the Santa Cruz Weekly?
Yes,
their membership. They've opened their membership. They've opened their membership to generous donors.
Oh, cool, man! Let's whip out those millions.
That's why that they didn't bother to get back to me.
Absolutely.
No, man, you could be generous. You just
absolutely.
Have a lot of money.
If you have
money. Because I put in an application a year ago, and then after, they told me they were only interested in people that had less than 2 years to live. Was what they said.
We could have threatened to shoot you in a year, and then you could.
Well, in 1996, when I was quite close to Victor Everlove, who is a wheelchair user, him and I both applied to Wham. He was accepted, and I wasn't. And he's in a wheelchair, and I have hidden disabilities, and that's what motivated me to start MedX.
And tell us a little bit about MedX for those who don't know.
MedX is just a very small service that I provide to a handful of people who truly are disabled, because that's one of the issues I'm having with this whole marijuana thing. I mean, I like to just put it on the table, and we need to legalize this product and let people have use for it. But I'm so disgusted by the business that it's turned into. There's so much greed involved in the handling of cannabis, from growing it to getting it to other people. So what I've decided to do, since I know a couple of people up in Mendocino, is I go up to Mendocino a couple of times a year, and I'll buy 1 or 2 pounds, depending on how much money I have, and then I come back, and I have a handful of people who I'll provide a half ounce or an ounce to at a reasonable cost, I believe, considering I have to go up there and get it. And the reason I do it is just to provide myself with the product, because I can't afford to go to the dispensaries. I can't afford to get medicine for myself. So fortunately, I'm from a big city, and I have balls, and I decided to start this service, and I just did it, and I've been doing it since October of 1996.
Well, you know, Anita, the Planning Commission has determined that that there is no incentive for people to drive to San Francisco to get marijuana, and so they aren't concerned about the fact that it's $150 an ounce cheaper there.
You know, it's interesting. We're going to be talking about that, or actually listening to the city council's debate on this, the ban on this.
Their report on that's missing. I looked for it on their website, and it's missing.
I've got a copy of the report. I don't have it, a hard copy. I can show it to you. But
is it online?
I could probably find it for you.
The figures?
It was online before. I don't know about the figures, but the staff report was online, and the ordinance that they passed was online. And we're talking about city council's meeting earlier this week, well, a week ago, Tuesday.
I'm talking about the Planning Commission.
And the Planning Commission, which has had two meetings on the issue of the moratorium on medical marijuana dispensaries, new dispensaries, I don't think their report is online. I think what you can get, I got a copy finally of their actual hearing. And I have not played it on free radio because I haven't gotten enough interest in it, but I may do that yet. The Planning Commission, this is some interesting background.
You should give out the phone number again here.
And yeah, I will do that. 427-3772, 427-FRSC, if you want to call in. You're listening, by the way, to Free Radio, 101.1 FM and www.freakradio.org. If you happen to be listening on computer, in the studio with me are Craig Canada and Anita Henry, two activists who have been struggling to kind of alert the community to what's going on around prices of marijuana, accessibility, overregulation, or profiteering, depending on the situation, and police misconduct or possible misconduct around these issues. So 427-3772 is the call-in number. The Planning Commission itself actually heard some testimony at length from mainly, I think, the two applicants who wanted to open clubs. And I played some of the earlier testimony before the city council. This last summer, city council first passed a so-called emergency ordinance that said there was a health, safety, or welfare emergency.
They declared a public health and safety emergency.
That required them to, and this is a very extreme emergency, because normally at city council, if you have emergency legislation, it requires 5 out of the 7 votes. This legislation, which suspends the due process that, say, an applicant has to seek a marijuana dispensary, requires 6 out of 7 votes. It's an extreme kind of requirement. I've never seen it used with any other kinds of laws or emergencies. And there was zero discussion. The word emergency did not appear in any discussion, including that of Mayor Mike Rotkin or any other member of the city council, certainly on this last tape, and we're going to hear the tape in a moment, but also in the two previous occasions in June of last year and in July. In June, they made a 45-day ban on all medical marijuana dispensary applications. In July, they made it a 6-month further ban. And then the meetings you were talking about, Craig, happened in the Planning Commission, where the Planning Commission, after first suspending the decision for one meeting, I think on a 3-3 tie vote, voted 5-2 to make permanent the ban on medical marijuana dispensaries, limiting them to 2 in the entire city. That, it has to be said, I thought that was what Rotkin was going to bring forward, because that's what the staff voted.
Well, you know what's interesting
but
about
it didn't.
You know what's
Instead,
interesting about the two dispensaries, Robert?
After
Lisa Molyneux was given permission to open her dispensary on the promise,
Greenway,
yeah, on the promise of providing, you know, not crap, but quality medicine to people who couldn't afford it. She was going to offer social services and possibly acupuncture and chiropractor. I mean, she had all kinds of wonderful touchy-feely thing she was going to do. I don't know how much of that she's done. And I remember going to Rotkin and some of the other council members and talking about the prices and the cost. Again, I thought it was too expensive. I know I couldn't afford to go there. And then when Ken Sampson was going to the council and he wanted to open up the Santa Cruz Patients Collective, I went to Rotkin and I said, why are you going to let another dispensary open? And he said, oh, competition is good. It's going to bring the price down. And lo and behold, the prices at Ken Sampson's dispensary are higher than they are at Greenway. So I don't have that much of a problem with them not allowing other dispensaries to open, because I really think they need to be regulated and they need to stop exploiting.
So there's a difference of opinion between us on that one.
Oh, absolutely, sure. Because I think dispensaries are exploiting people. They're exploiting the people who can least afford it, the people who are sick. I don't give a crap about people who are really healthy. You know, anybody can get a letter, Robert, and I have nothing against that. Anybody can get a letter if you can afford it.
If
you can afford it, you can get doctors.
Most homeless people can't.
Absolutely, and that's troubling. So why should dispensaries exploit people who are ill and who are on fixed incomes? People who have good jobs and drive up in their nice cars, they go into dispensaries all the time. There are lines outside.
Right. Well, my point would be, while I tend to agree with you about profiteering, I tend to disagree with you about the impact of opening more dispensaries. I think if you were allowed enough dispensaries to open, it would lower the prices. And I think also, if you don't, the rationale that is being used here is one of, it's a toxic drug that's more dangerous than all these damn alcohol and tobacco outlets and pharmacies all over town. Which
Jim Crow.
Shit.
It's the same argument they've been using for 40 or 50 years,
that's the
Robert.
Problem. The argument gets confused in the public mind, and I understand that your argument is a different argument and an important one to consider, the argument of profiteering and real accessibility.
Greed. To me, it's greed.
Right. But the main arguments that are being used here by the marijuana, the reefer madness people who don't want to see marijuana around at all, who are ranting about drug dens, and they made, you're going to hear these comments in the city council tape we're going to play in a moment.
I wouldn't doubt if some of the council members toke a little herb at home themselves. They just, they just keep it on the down low.
How do we get past all this shit? And I can't agree with the waiting 6 months and having people show up at a bogus meeting is the way to do it. Although you have offered in the past, and you and Craig have offered, although I don't know if Craig ever showed up at these meetings, but you have offered to have a public meeting on the whole issue of the drug war or the issue of marijuana in Santa Cruz and what to do about it.
Hey, I would show up at any Sub Rosa meeting, Robert, that you hold, because you need a geography. You need a location for people to gather and a time for people to know. Mm-hmm. Any time that the public wants to come, because I'm fighting my own fight, but I'm fighting their fight. But I'm tired, and I'm sick, and I don't have the energy to do it, and politics just drive me crazy.
Right, and you're one of the few people, you and Craig are one of the two of the few people willing to talk publicly on this issue. I mean, Andre Tischler is gone. Theodore Carey, she calls in occasionally, but you don't get much from her. I did hear, it's ironic, and I, here we have another difference of opinion. We're going to hear this at the meeting. We won't hear this at the meeting, but all these people there were a few people who argued in favor of the medical marijuana dispensaries being allowed to open and against this moratorium ban that is passed at the last council meeting, continued ban. And they argued, you need more dispensaries, more choice, freedom of opportunity, free enterprise. And also they argued the arguments against it are reefer madness arguments. They're bogus arguments. One of the arguments.
Well, these are new arguments. Right. They didn't have these arguments a few years ago, Robert. Right. They were different arguments.
Right, but the arguments that are being used now are, Santa Cruz doesn't need more dispensaries. We have enough for all the people in Santa Cruz.
Right.
I want to address that, Robert, and I got the figures here. I brought them with me. Okay. Greenway reports that within the city they have 804 patients. From the county, they have 954, and from outside, 2,694, for a total of 4,452. Lime Kiln reported they have 300 within the city, 770 from the county, not within the city, and 280 from outside the county. So I've got here, you've got, 1154 within the city total. And why don't you calculate the total percentages within the city, within the county, and so forth from that? I don't have it. I've got the percentages by dispensary. And so for Lime Kiln, for Sampson's dispensary, it's 25% within the city, 55% from the county, and 20% from outside the county. Mm-hmm. And for Greenway, it's 18.1% within the city, 21.4% from the county, and 60.5% from outside.
Right.
Now, so I guess what that works out to is they got about 55% that are coming from the county, not within the city. And yet, what is, what's his name? Who is that? Coonerty, that's it. Neil Coonerty?
Neil Coonerty is the supervisor.
Interjecting himself into this controversy over the Boulder Creek dispensary, saying, do we need it? I thought that was decisively decided in 1996 when 73% of Santa Cruz voted for Proposition 215.
As you both know, the local cities, in spite of the recent decision by the California Supreme Court, which held that Proposition 215 does not limit the amount of marijuana people can grow in spite of SB 420, cities are using zoning regulations, and that's what we're about to hear.
Jim Crow laws.
Zoning regulations.
Jim Crow laws.
Zone out and ban medical marijuana dispensaries, and that's what's happening. And then when voters themselves are passing initiatives to say to the police, come on, make it the lowest priority, the police are successfully circumventing this as well. Now, I guess the issue is going to come up in November. If you get some kind of de facto legalization of marijuana at some level, I know that you have a lot of criticism of this particular initiative, Greg. Nonetheless, this may alter the situation somewhat. But my concern is, A, if it doesn't pass, and B, even if it does, the concerns you have, and C, what do we do between now and then if we get people who are active and publicizing the number of marijuana arrests, which are rising. At least they're rising nationally. We know that. I'm not sure about the arrests in the city by the police.
160 of them in the last 6 months.
And compared with the previous 6 months?
There were less in the prior 6 months. There were only 123.
So they're up.
So at 37 more.
It's a significant
instead
rise.
Of less.
And the question is, if this is the lowest priority, what the fuck are they doing?
Because they're out there sniffing for smoke.
Yeah, and the question is, what can we do to stop it? And the answer is, of course, first it is to get people who are interested in publicizing it, people to stand up around it, and get people who are not struggling with debilitating illnesses like you are. You're ill yourself, and Craig, you're...
Well, it's doing what you're... You have the platform, Robert. But at least you've got a voice, and you use it whether you're in the studio or you're on the street, and that's what we need. The problem is we need
more voices, and we need people who are willing to stand up and do what you and Valerie Corral and Theodora Carey and others did in 1992 and 1993, that demanded that when people come and say stop the camp raids, the helicopters that are going over and surveilling, you know, stop the busts. And
get my point here, going back to these numbers. Okay, so if my point wasn't clear, now you've got the city of Santa Cruz declaring a moratorium and putting a cap on dispensaries because they're claiming that they've got clients coming from out of the county. That's from the county Santa Cruz into the city and by, and that seems to be their big problem. While you've got Neil Coonerty out there trying to stop this dispensary in Boulder Creek.
And you got D.A. Bob Lee, or at least the Santa Clara D.A., going after Minch of the Emporium in Felton.
Yeah, that's true. And I just want to, another thing about these figures. So the totals are like, we got about 2,900 in the city and county of Santa Cruz, and about the same from outside the county. Now, how many dispensaries are there in Santa Clara County, and what's the population?
I think that they're getting more, but there were very few before.
The population of Santa Clara County is about 2 million.
Yeah. Okay.
And the population of Santa Cruz County is what, 200,000?
250,000, maybe.
Okay. So you got the same number of clients coming over the hill here as there are living here in Santa Cruz. In other words, all those people in San Jose are going up to San Francisco to get it because it's cheaper.
Right.
I'll take your word for it. I wasn't following all of that. But
run it by you again, Robert.
Okay.
The population of Santa Clara County is 2 million people.
Yeah.
It's just over the hill. The population of Santa Cruz County is about 250,000 people.
Right.
The dispensaries have about the same number, about 2,000, what is it, 900 or 700, something like that, about 2,900 clients within the city and county of San Francisco, and about 2,900 within the city and county of Santa Cruz together, about 2,900, and about 2,900 from Santa Clara County, which has a population 10 times that of Santa Cruz County. So they're all going up to San Francisco to get it, going much further instead of coming here.
But do we have any figures about how many are going to San Francisco to get it?
Oh, plenty, I'm sure.
We don't know that. I mean, that's what I'm saying. I'm not quite sure where that figure comes from. But my point would
Well,
be,
Robert,
wait a minute. I mean,
I'll tell you.
Yeah.
If you'll let me speak.
Sure. I'm trying to
speak. Okay,
too,
and quit kicking me, Anita.
kick him again, Anita.
Let's see. So what percent of 250,000 is 2,900?
I don't know, 3,000 it's a little bit more than 1%, maybe 1 and 2%, maybe, I'm guessing.
So you take the same number.
But, you know, my point would be, Craig, that, you know, this is a tourist town. We ask people to come to town to buy knickknacks.
That's the
and
point
tickets.
I was getting at.
Right. You know, and therefore, you know, we don't ask pharmacies what percentage of your drug sales or alcohol outlets, what percentage of your alcohol sales or tobacco outlets, you know, how many people are coming from the out of town to buy here, and limit those much more toxic substances. This is horse shit. And even dignify it with taking up time to look at the stats. And that's why I was perhaps getting a little impatient with what you were saying. Not because I don't think that there is an argument there, I'm sure. But I think that the argument misses the basic point, is that this is treating marijuana as some kind of danger and menace.
That needs to be hidden away.
Jim Crow laws, that's right. The point I've been trying to make. It's just another aspect of the whole Jim Crow prejudice.
You're listening to Craig Canada and Anita Henry, as well as me. I'm Robert Norris on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. We have a call-in number, 427-3772. If you're out of the area, it's 831-427-3772. Give a call if you have some thoughts on the subject. I think we have open lines. I hope we have open lines. It looks like we have open lines. And while we're waiting for your calls, I'm going to take a brief musical break, and then we're going to listen to the City Council's latest rubber stamping of the staff recommendation. I don't think it was the staff recommendation, because the Planning Commission accepted an earlier staff recommendation. There would be a complete ban from now on into the future on medical marijuana dispensaries that are new, and on grow houses that are new. I think there may have been one exceptions for Greenway and Ken Sampson's Club, although I'm not quite sure about that.
Two grow houses, they'll probably be approved. It looks like what they're trying to
do. What I'm saying is that the Planning Commission's recommendation was for something harsher, and we heard earlier in the paper that in the good times, maybe it was the Metro, that Rotkin and Lane wanted another club or two opened, and therefore maybe they're... Rotkin is the mayor. He controls the agenda unless the city council overrules him. He might have put this off and said we'll wait for a longer period of time, or maybe the staff, for some unknown reason, we got no real information out of this tape, and you're not going to learn a lot. You're just going to see the politicians dancing around. Decided not to go for the complete ban, but instead to go for a 4-month moratorium, continuing a ban on applications for another 4 months.
Well, I can assure you, if they allow any other dispensaries to open, their prices will not be a dime less. They will be the same or higher. Guaranteed. Nobody goes into opening dispensaries because they have a big heart.
If they did, I'd have opened one. You were telling me the Pacific Coast Cooperative did have cheaper prices, correct?
Oh, yeah, you could get a decent... I got a decent ounce from them for $200.
So it isn't always true, apparently, if Craig's testimony is accurate here. And there are probably dispensaries in other cities where... the real question is, you know, does the competition in Los Angeles, where they're putting on the big ban and eliminating hundreds of dispensaries...
Well, they're limiting them to 70. Right.
It's Christmas for the black market.
Right. Has this... And this could be found out pretty... You know, I think not necessarily easily, but it could be researched. Has the competition in Los Angeles reduced the prices? All you got to do is go down and talk to the folks. Now, you're shaking your head.
No, it's very expensive in Los Angeles.
Have you researched the
difference? I know someone in L.A.
Have you researched the difference between, let's say, 2 years ago and now in terms of prices after all the dispensaries opened up?
I can assure you prices will never go down.
You sound like an ideologue. We can't accept anything you say anymore. You're going to be leaving the studio in 5 minutes if you keep up this attitude.
I'm telling you, it's true, Robert.
I'm going to go smoke cigarettes.
Because it is a business now, and nobody opens a dispensary because they're compassionate and care about easing other people's pain. They do it because it's a business.
They might want to lure more customers by cheaper prices, and that might be why they do it, too.
Nope, they'll just make more money because it's America. It's the American way, and it's greed, and it's a business.
You don't have any evidence
about
what's
going on. There are many little corporations.
You don't have evidence of what's going on in Los Angeles, and neither do I. I just don't know. I think, though, that...
But I know somebody...
Most of them have their menus on the Internet. You can look it up.
Somebody can. If the city council wanted to research this issue, in fact, if the planning department really wanted to research the issue, it wouldn't take them another 4 months to do it. It's already taken...
Robert, it's so new. That's what they said at the last meeting, 15 years after Proposition 215. It's so new.
Right. So in other words, to me, this is not the excuses they're giving for having a moratorium have little to do with what the real situation is. What do you think? Should medical marijuana moratoriums, dispensaries be, new ones be stopped here in Santa Cruz? Should
there be some kind of oversight?
Of both police misconduct and also dispensaries.
That's what I would like to see.
I think you're looking for both. You can call and give your opinion, 427-3772. And for me, I think there isn't really any question on these issues. I think most people probably agree there should be both of these things, and there should be, and marijuana shouldn't be illegal. But what are we going to do to change it? What are your suggestions out there? Are you just going to sit there and let the police, you know, frighten you at will? Because that's what we're getting now. The sheriffs and police can essentially take away your rights at their own option.
And if you're a listener of Robert's show, then I'm sure you're the person that voted for this. But you can't come out and vote for something and then do nothing else about it and assume that everything is going to run smoothly. I mean, you have to work on this all the time.
And I think, Anita, maybe we give a little encouragement. If people are willing to call you and want to have a meeting, would you be willing to have a meeting?
I certainly would,
Craig,
Robert.
Craig, would you be willing to attend this meeting?
I don't know. You know, Robert, I have gotten to the point where I don't go places where I can't smoke. And
can't smoke at Sub Rosa?
No, they hate smokers there.
Even out sitting outside?
No, they hate smokers there.
No, I didn't know that.
There is a no smoking sign.
And so if I can't smoke somewhere around there, I'm not going.
We do have a caller. Maybe this is somebody calling from a smoky zone. Let's see here. Hi there. Are you calling from a smoky zone there, caller?
Hey, how you doing, Robert?
So you've been listening to the show there,
yes.
Andrea?
Yes. Yes, I have.
And what are your thoughts?
Well, you know, as far as what Anita Henry said, you know, she's absolutely right. It's, you know, at least my experience with the Greenway Club, you know, it became clear to me that, yeah, they really don't care about disabled people and their pain. It's all profiteering and greed, and they seem to, you know, have a selectiveness of certain people that they'll help and continue to help, and others they squeeze out, you know, and that was my experience. And
you too, huh?
It was a rather unpleasant experience.
Humiliating.
I was pretty upset and pretty angry when I saw that Lisa Molyneux was running for city council. She doesn't even deserve a city council position. I mean, if anybody were to deserve a position, especially for having a stance on medical marijuana, it would be Anita, you know. And I had personal experiences with Lisa Molyneux's partner. And I seen, you know, the way she treats different customers that come into that club. And it was clear to me that, you know, if you're kind of down and out, you know, and you're not spending, like, lots of money, you know, they can make you not feel welcome there. But then, you know, when other people that come in there that seem to be spending, you know, a lot of money on time, and they're coming in, you know, 2-3 times a week, they're real, real friendly to them. And, you know, and it's sad, you know,
Do you use medical marijuana for a condition yourself, Andrea?
Yeah, sometimes. I don't, you know, use as much as I used to because, you know, the smoking part of it's really harsh for me. And, you know, I've been trying to, you know, I wrote a letter to Sam Farr, trying to get Sam Farr to help me, you know, with perhaps being able to get the Marinol. And every time when I hear, oh, well, you know, the Marinol's so expensive, you know, and, you know, the prescription, you know, for a bottle of Marinol capsules is, you know, $1,000. Well, you know what? When you look at the cost of what it, you know, costs, you know, to build more weapons and all that and war, I mean, there's always money for that. So,
Andrea,
for a bottle
let me get you to sum up because I want to get some comments from my guests and then I want to go on to this tape.
Sure. But anyway, I just wanted to call that 2 cents in because, you know, yeah, maybe there isn't much evidence of what you said as far as, you know what Anita said about profiteering and greed and whether or not they really care about people, you know. There might not be much of proof of that, but there are sure, you know, plenty of individual so-called horror stories, you know, about some of these dispensaries, and their prices are very outrageous. But anyway, yeah, I'm going to let you go. I just wanted to
Thanks, Andrea, for calling in.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for calling, Andrea. You know, I had a horrible experience with them, too.
So, yeah, I mean, and I'm not saying that people haven't had those experiences, and frankly, the latest I heard about Lisa Molyneux is she was over in Monterey, I guess, opposing a ban on medical marijuana dispensaries either there or on Seaside, and my first thought was, oh, well, that's great. You know, I'm glad to hear that, you know, that some people are speaking up against this. But then I realized, why wasn't she in Santa Cruz opposing the ban? And I found myself thinking, it's a double standard. She may actually be investing over there in, you know, in those clubs. Although I have no indication. I can't get a call back from Lisa Molyneux. I have not. She used to be on my show a considerable amount when we were pushing to give her, get her a permit for her Greenway club.
You know, and let's not forget, Lisa Molyneux came into the marijuana business and left a very lucrative job. I mean, she herself was interviewed several times. I don't remember exactly what she did, but she was in some kind of sports broadcasting, was making over $100,000 a year in her job before she left her job to open a dispensary. I mean, we're talking about a woman that had some cash, was a homeowner, and was a grower before she opened her dispensary.
Well, I don't think that speaks against her necessarily.
Well, it's business, Robert. It's business. Yes, this woman didn't leave a job making over $100,000 a year to fucking serve other
business.
People because she cares.
Right. Well, sometimes there's a mixture of things, both business and caring. But, you know, I hear what you're saying, and we're getting, you know, I can't get any response from Molyneux, and she doesn't seem to be.
I never did either. I don't have very good feelings for them, Robert.
Anyway, but, you know, anyway, let's take a brief musical break, and then we'll...
Andrea, thank you for calling in. That gave me a little reassurance, because I don't want to sound bossy, but they really are businesses. It really is about greed.
Give me back a minute.
All right, but let's...
Okay, let's hear some music.
Yeah, let's get musical here. I mean, heck, why not?
Made up of stories and songs about all of the people who did their small best to tell all of the rights from the wrong. Kevin was someone who'd played all his cards, and his world kept on coming apart. He smiled like a star through a forested sky at the few who'd look in his heart. Down near the bay, just to play a small part in the story. Now this is a town with a certain renown, and it's proud of its liberal ways. But if you are poor, who will show you the door, or just slam the door right in your face? Kevin, they'd just throw in jail again and again and again, with a stay away order that meant half the town was forbidden the half with his friends. Down near the bay where it's foggy all day, the stars are much harder to see, and it takes all your heart just to play a small part in the story. Shanghai, a man who would awaken and find himself sailing away. These days they just outlaw everything, so they can pick and choose who to waylay. Kevin, they put in a cell with a man who had once attacked cellmates before. Kevin's life ended by angry bear hands all alone in his cell on the floor. Down near the bay where it's foggy all day, the stars are much harder to see, and it takes all your heart just to play a small part in the story. This is a town that the rest of the world always thinks is ahead of the game. But Kevin could tell you a story or two, and there's plenty gets treated the same. Officials who vie for the spotlight will tell you they're sorry the way it went down. But Kevin was cost all the little he got, and it's still going round and around. Down near the bay where it's foggy all day, the stars are much higher. small part in the story. Down near the bay where it's foggy all day, the stars are much harder to see. And it takes all your heart just to play a small part in the story. The world isn't made up of atoms, you know.
Okay, that was actually a song for Kevin Freeman. He was a homeless man who was murdered in 2003 in his jail cell in Santa Rita Psychiatric Ward while serving a 30-day sentence for being drunk in public. His murder, the second of an inmate in the jail in 13 months, raised concerns about Santa Rita Jail's policies up in that area. I'm looking at a story from the Berkeley Daily Planet. But with me on the line is... vet and sometime homeless activist, battle-weary Bob Patton. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Robert. I hope this is a good time to call in. I was listening to
it's
your
not,
previous
but it's always good.
Interview.
Any time's a good time to have you on the line. We're in the middle of medical marijuana and marijuana moratoriums and drug war bullshit. But, you know, you're a man who's been looking at the vets hall, the strange and immediate closing down of the vets hall, which impacts a lot of homeless vets. And what do you got to tell us?
Let me just stop you there for a minute. I can barely hear you. I don't know if you can do something about the phone. And I noticed on your interview, too, you were lower than your participant.
How about now?
That didn't help much. I can barely hear you, but...
How about now?
That's a little better.
Okay, how about now?
That's a little better. But let me go ahead and respond to your question. I heard you do an intro on that, and I know we've been talking about for years what goes on with the disrespect that the veterans have and the inability to... do both their fraternal and their community work very successfully. I mean, there's always some hampering going on. And this closure of the building just may be a continuation of that. And I wanted to make a report back to you after we did yet another engineer in to do a second opinion on the building closure.
And again, to clarify, the building was closed a week ago because of alleged architectural defects. Some cornice had fallen down, something like that?
It's clear that there was some damage to the building and some fall away of what some are calling concrete and others are calling stucco. So I'm not an expert on that material.
Okay, but
the
second engineer said what?
Yeah. Well, the closure was very abrupt and just put us all homeless. There's a couple side stories to it that might give your listeners some interest to keep listening. It was the very first meeting of, the charter meeting of, the Women's Veterans Organization here in Santa Cruz, a support group for returning veterans. And this is the main reason a lot of the organizations are in existence. We have, our sons and daughters and fathers coming back from this endless war here, Iraq, Afghanistan,
Pakistan,
around the world. And Bill Motto Post has always been in the anti-war front when it comes to veterans organizations.
So what about this Women's Vets? What did that have to do with the closing of the...
Well, they had their charter organization meeting at that time. And this is a rare to have an all-women's veterans organization that's going to help...
Right.
Returning vets and women are particularly kind of out of the loop, the veterans.
Right, but what does this have to do with the building?
Well, it's a side story that's a little bit of interest to me, if I can continue, because these women had this building just ripped right out from underneath them on the very day they were organizing to help other vets. And what the veterans do is not just for vets, but the community outreach, too.
Yeah.
So the building is closed for us, closed for the community, even the yoga people who want to hang on ropes, do rock and roll, or dance around in scarves. You know, there's all kind of activities going on there. So the community lost a very important, beautiful, and center.
Well, is it a legitimate reason to close down? Was there a legitimate safety concern, in your opinion?
Well, the building hasn't collapsed as of yet. I did notice there was a crack or two, and if I may interrupt. I was shocked that they closed it down immediately. It made no sense to me. There has to be something more behind it.
And the question I also have for you, Bob, is
it hasn't collapsed
is the controversial
yet.
Tim Bratton involved in any of this, the manager who has been accused by numerous vets of his own private agenda and essentially disregarding the desires of the vets for use of their own building?
Well, that's what I was alluding to in my opening statement about the disrespect that the veterans felt. The building is supposed to be to honor veterans or those that served in war,
right.
And its services, as many have noted in several articles, that it was a very important community center, probably the last one they had. Mm-hmm. And when the first article came out, I wrote in a comment, I was assuring the community that the veterans organization was initiating an investigation. I also followed through on that at the county supervisors meeting, saying we were investigating both the need for it and the reason for it. Well, we found that the need for it doesn't exist. So let me go ahead and just give you some points that I've already made to the county and trying to get a response and actually a rescinding of the closing order and to be allowed back in, not just us, but the community and their activities allowed back in ASP.
Go ahead.
So this is the number one point, and this is after talking to and seeing the report of the engineer, and he's a structural engineer, and he's a and you can read about him in the headlines of the Sentinel right now. It's online. But these are the points. Okay, that's the damage that is observed on the exterior is not caused by seismic activity. It's related to aging. I mean, just think how many buildings are of that age and that construction in this community, and how many of them are either city hall or county buildings.
Can I interject here for a minute?
No, let me finish. I want to make these points, and then I'll take some questions and comments. I respect your support. So the deterioration has not substantially affected the building's structural capacity at this point. Point two. The Spalding concrete, which is a technical term where there's the falling hazard, must be addressed immediately to prevent injury to the public. Okay, this can simply be done by cordoning off the area, putting up scaffolding, and providing either security or, permit as needed with release. The third and final thing is, and then I'll take questions or appreciate any comments, is that technically there is no code seismic mandates that require immediate action or justifies emergency closure of any part of the building other than the fall zone around the auditorium. So what we got from the county was they're pulling our leg. So I'll take comments and questions now. Thank you for your patience.
Go ahead, Craig.
Yeah, well, I find your points interesting. My thinking was that I do watch earthquakes, and California is all the pots are boiling. There's been ongoing swarms in the Salton Sea, Obsidian Butt. Let's see, a Olancha sequence, Keeler, the geysers, the pinnacles. There's all ongoing swarms. A swarm started in Yellowstone on the 17th. We had a 5.9 off of Eureka Petrolia this afternoon, and there's been two sixes in that area. It was a 5.9 this afternoon and a 6 30 days ago. The whole state is extremely seismically active, as I said. There's swarms at the geysers, at Keeler, all up and down the state. And so, are you aware of that?
Of course. Yeah, I mean, I see it in the news. I don't follow geologic activities as a hobby or anything. But
well, I do. And the Olancha sequence was listed as a major event in October of 2009, and it has continued unabated. This is a swarm we're talking about.
Oh yeah, well,
this is a technical discussion that I don't know can be resolved.
Well, let me just respond to it.
The point is that the probability of a major quake in the area at this particular time is particularly high if you go by the activity. There's more activity in California right now, seismically, than there has been in a long time.
I'll
make this statement here, that we recommend a process of designing and funding that we can support a seismic retrofit of the building and immediately ordered to avoid the inevitable seismic damage for the inevitable earthquake that you're talking about. And this is part of what we're looking for from the county. We'll get on board with that plan for retrofit and even help do funding. Because, like you said, inevitably, I said that, but we're bound to have an earthquake.
And the probability of one soon is very high. There's a lot of activity up and down the state.
Okay, well, you call your supervisor and tell him, get that.
I'm looking at the article on the Sentinel, which is, as you pointed out, is online now.
Oh, thanks for checking out.
And according to you, apparently there's the engineer from the county, or whoever that may have been, said, based upon our brief visual observation, is our opinion the deterioration observed presents a significant risk of injury or death to the occupants of the auditorium should a seismic event occur, read the report by SoCal engineering firm Streeter Group. But, and this is what you pointed out, Emory-based civil engineer Paul Cox, an at-large member of the Bill Motto Post, has taken issue with the findings. At the request of his colleagues, Cox visited the site with county building officials last week and reported back that the county's evaluation missed the mark. Quote, there are seismic issues for any building of this age, but they are not sufficient to warrant emptying the building like this, Cox told the Sentinel on Thursday. The problem, Cox said, was that that rebar within the hall's concrete had swelled, causing the facade to flake, but that was not indicative of any greater deficiency. At this state, it means nothing in terms of the structural capacities of the building, he said, noting that the fix was relatively simple. It's deferred maintenance. And here's the key sentence.
Yes.
The county should have taken care of that a long time ago.
And that building...
I
don't want to interrupt again, but I will. That building is too important to too many people to have closed it down immediately without offering another geography for people to gather or to immediately start to remedy the problem. I'm on your side. That building should not have been shut down. I think they overreacted.
Yes, and we've stated that at the
On the other hand, let's talk about direct action here. I take it the Bill Motto Post...
Hey, look where we got on this. We made the headlines. How much of your direct action...
Direct action will be taking back the building, Bob. The direct action will be resuming the activities as normal and saying, we can all sign liability waivers, saying if anything falls on us, the county is not responsible. That direct action would be reversing with human energy now and not waiting for them later to agree with you. That's what direct action is.
Yeah, let's take our ropes and climbing stuff and we'll just scale that building, kick in the windows.
You don't
and
scale
do
it, you just walk in the front door. And if you need a sledgehammer to get in, you fucking use a sledgehammer.
Well,
I mean, that's what was done in Oakland when we opened up houses for the homeless that had been abandoned or inappropriately closed down, and they were fixed up. You do not wait for a government that seems to be, didn't give a shit for years about fixing up the building and now wants to close you down. You're going to what? You're going to wait for another 9 months in court? How long are you going to wait on this one, Bob?
Well, we haven't waited, except for the immediate
You're not in the building. You are waiting right now.
Gathering of the truth. No, waiting is part of doing. You can't just always do,
Well, you can. It's a matter of your choice. And again, you're a man on the ground. I'm not saying you haven't done good things. You're in the paper on this issue. You're educating the community. But, of course, they're still resisting you. They're saying there's too much risk, said Nancy Gordon, director of the county's General Service Department, which oversees the facilities. The county has planned further inspection of the building and expects to report back in March. You going to wait for the March report, Bob?
I doubt if we're going to wait for the March report. We're going to keep on doing actions we can do. They have to wait for the March report.
Well, you're not going to take back the building, though. You're not going to walk in and set up your offices again at the present time, right?
As soon as possible is what we stated.
Well, it's possible tonight if you do it.
There's not going to be any direct action.
It's possible when you decide to do it.
There's not going to be any direct action by any of us tonight to take back that building.
Well, that's very disappointing. I'm not going to provide you with a pizza as I'd hoped I would.
However, I can only tell people that are listening, don't do that because it's not right. So, you know, anybody listening can understand what I'm saying. But anyways, I wanted to continue with a few other things. And let me grab this piece of paper. We have what's called the agreement. Oh, I want to address that one point you made about, yeah, we have given the county the option to, and the request to open that building now for as needed, particularly for the veterans' meeting times and their most important events as need basis, and to have a time-specific that county personnel would be there for safety and to allow entrance to the building until they get it taken care of. And we're also going to agree that we'll go out of the building for anywhere from 2 days to 2 weeks so they can do a retrofit when they get the appropriate paperwork done and get the contracts out. So we've offered them, or we're offering them, all of that solution. If they actually try to force us out to some vacant storefront,
well, aren't you out now? I mean, you left. They forced you out. You're out, man. You aren't in. You're out, right? That's where you are. You're on the streets. You're on the sidewalk. You're issuing press releases, which is good, but you're out. They did force you out.
Homeless. A whole bunch of the community became homeless with
right.
their activities.
Right, but you guys chose to agree with it. You went along. You didn't say, no, we're not leaving. We don't see a problem. Goodbye. You know, if you want to move us, move in the gendarmerie, or alternately, you can set up a tent outside.
We refused forced relocation, and like I said, none of us are going to do a direct action at this point. It's not something on the table. Our actions made the newspaper there, and I'm proud of that.
Well, I'm proud of that, too, and I'm glad you did, Bob, but you understand what I'm
saying.
It's up
to the community now and others to get a hold of their supervisors or do whatever they feel we're looking for. As much support and money, we'll take it in
time.
We'll take
it in
$100 bills.
If you have a number, why don't you give a number that people can call if they want to be of assistance in this?
Oh, let me see.
If you don't have the number right now, call me back.
Okay. We're going to try to regain the building as soon as possible and for both us and the community.
Right. I would think that, again, I'm the interloper who isn't risking shit, and I'm just talking from the sidelines.
I appreciate it.
But I'm saying, give them a deadline. If you're not doing it in 2 weeks, we set up a tent outside the building. We invite the community to come on down and provide us with an alternate facility, which we're going to open up right now. Or alternately, we are going to enter the facility. We won't damage it if we don't have to. We'll do as little damage as possible. We'll replace whatever we damage. We'll partition off the area that is dangerous.
That's for them to do. And then let us in. Ask them to do all that stuff.
You can ask them to do it, or you can say, we don't give it. We're not waiting for you idiots to do it. We'll do it ourselves because we want access to the building that we and the community need. In other words, the difference between asking and waiting and acting is a real distinction. But let me get back to the rest of what I'm doing here on the air today. We're listening and talking to Bob Patton, who is with, Bill Motto Post?
Bill Motto Post.
And there's a story in today's Sentinel just came out. There are three comments, one very negative, Bob. Better watch out. You got your critics. On the right. I'm a critic on the left.
But he's clueless. I'll be able to answer those questions on that comment if you want me to.
I do, but I've got only half an hour. We really have to finish up the topic we were discussing. Maybe, you can come on back on Sunday with a report on how not only the Veterans Building has been taken over, but Bob Bratton has been given a free expenses he pays trip to Hawaii to investigate, yoga in Hawaii.
I'll put you on my list. I might be on such a popular reporter's quest that I'll won't have time for you. But anyways,
I know you're I know you've outgrown free radio, Bob. I mean, you're now a Sentinel feature. So
I moved up. Now we need to bring the rest of the community with me.
Hey, thank you, Bob. And again, give us a call back before the end of the show, and we'll give numbers that people can call into.
I would say the best thing is, if you know about this issue, call your frickin' county supervisor or somebody you know, or call Nancy Gordon herself there at General Services.
The problem with that, Bob, is they are closed. They have no voicemail lines. They don't have any. Unlike the city council, you have to call during business hours, so they can't call now. I would suggest if people want to call for more information, that you give them another number that you can rally support with.
Yeah, the thing is, the building's closed, so we don't have our number anymore.
Well, how about, are you willing to give your own phone number for people?
Not around this issue.
All right,
no.
If people want to call the Huff line, 423-HUFF, I will pass on any phone calls and messages to you, Bob.
Okay, and as soon as we get the committee together, we can maybe put a phone up, but we are putting together a media committee.
Sounds
so
good.
So I'll make sure we get a number and get this off
so
before March.
If you want to help out, if you want more information from Bob, if you want to be involved in this, do give a call to Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and we include homeless vets, 423-4833, and I'll pass it on to you, Bob.
All right, thanks, Robert, for a vigorous interview.
Hey, and thank you for the information, Bob, and for your work on this.
Yeah.
Bye-bye. Phone lines are open, but I'm going to actually go directly now to the Santa Cruz City Council of Tuesday. This is item number, I don't know what, 12, 13, 14 on the City Council agenda. It was held in the afternoon. This is the resolution to Madison actually hasn't called in for quite a while.
Oh, really?
The medical marijuana dispensary ban, but we have a caller, so I'm going to take this caller first. Hey there, caller, you're on Free Radio with the triumvirate fighting against drug hysteria in Santa Cruz.
Hey, Santa Cruz!
Hey there, Drum
Circle.
Hey, Drum Circle Dave, make it quick because we're rolling late.
This city of Santa Cruz is anti-patriotic and anti-marijuana.
Not to mention anti-vet.
They closed down the vet's hall, not giving them anywhere to go. They should have gave them the morgue building, you know, on the Pacific Garden Mall, you know, where they...
How about the Rittenhouse Mausoleum? That's open, you know.
Well, they're anti-patriotic on that point. What do you think?
Those floors up above O'Neill's are empty.
Yeah, I mean, they should have gave the vets priority. They should have gave them that morgue building they just built that they can't lease or anything.
Well, it's the Rittenhouse building.
Yeah, it is true that I believe they were offering to relocate them somewhere else, but the vets are saying the vets building is quite fine for us. This is a bogus issue. We want back in.
Yeah, well, I hope the morgue building guy, I know you know the name of
Rittenhouse
it, right,
building,
Rob,
but it's the Rittenhouse building. Any reports?
Now, they should donate that to the vets temporarily so we can get on
yeah,
with
well,
our
it's,
show.
Yeah, it's privately owned, and the Rittenhouse family wasn't interested in a plaza there. It sure isn't as help, I think, interested in this.
Well,
although,
they're patriotic, aren't they?
They're right-wing, so I don't know. It depends on what you mean.
Bob Patton, I mean, he could give Rittenhouse a call, right, and just say, hey, you know, let's do this right. You
I
know,
like to think
I'm
of him as
you know, and I need somewhere to
that's
go.
That's story. Yeah. Anyway, any reports from the Drum Circle? I'm going to roll on you, Dave.
The Drum Circle is smoke. Come on down and smoke there, whatever your name is. And that girl, April, too. Wednesday, just come on down, smoke, man, show your solidarity in smoking at the Drum Circle, definitely.
All right.
And, it all went real well, Rob. Didn't see you there, but get on with your show. Peace, Santa Cruz. Bye.
Thank you, Dave. And actually, I was there briefly, but probably not very much. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. In the studio, Anita Henry, Craig Canada, and, of course, the ineffable and much beloved Robert Norse. That's me. Here's Santa Cruz City Council from Tuesday, a week ago, and meeting in the afternoon when most people couldn't attend, instead of having an evening session, which used to be the approach for Santa Cruz City Councils, and in this very emergency ordinance, which would make it illegal to even apply. Well, it's not illegal to apply, but it would freeze any applications for 4 more months, having already freezed it for about 6 or 7 months, actually. 8 months, more or less.
Does anybody know if Krieger is playing rent on a place?
I do not know. And that's, of course, Stuart, the person who's trying to open a medical marijuana facility and is having his application frozen.
Members of the council, Alex Corey, assistant planning director. Briefly, this is a request to extend our current moratorium on medical marijuana for 4 months and 15 days. Our current... Briefly, this is a request to extend our current moratorium on medical marijuana for 4 months and 15 days. Our current moratorium is scheduled to end on February 8th. We had hoped to have the new ordinance here before you before that date. The Planning Commission has made a recommendation. We're still working out some of the details of it. We have it planned tentatively to bring it to the council next month. So, but we're requesting the 4 months and 15 days, which is the maximum allowed by state law, to make sure we don't have to request another moratorium. So, and if the council adopts the ordinance before that date, then we can repeal the moratorium that we're, the extension that we're requesting today.
Thank you. Let me open this up to the public. Although the topic's the moratorium, I understand it's sometimes difficult to separate out the moratorium from the issue of, you know, the outcome once the moratorium is lifted. So I'm going to entertain comments about medical marijuana, dispensaries, and that entire issue. But again, the only issue that we're deciding today is whether or not to extend the moratorium, and we'll make a final decision about what we're going to actually allow when we get a recommendation formally from staff and from the Planning Commission. So let me open this to the public. You have 2 minutes each to comment. I'm going to make one exception. There's one proposed dispensary that actually has a permit application in, and I'm going to give them 5 minutes if they want, because they have an economic interest in this in some direct way, and so if they have other additional comments, a little bit more, that would be fine. Everyone else will have 2 minutes to comment on this and come up. Please come up in any order.
Good afternoon, Mayor, City Council. My name is Derek Verduzco, and I wanted to talk to you about the additional marijuana dispensary. There's a video on YouTube right now that's produced by the group Take Back Santa Cruz. This video pertains to Evergreen Cemetery, a historical landmark here in Santa Cruz where Loudon Nelson is buried. This area has been turned into a known drug den. The video displays views of drug paraphernalia, syringes, and marijuana bongs. The cemetery is very close to Friendship Park, where my children play. This area has become very unsafe and environmentally unsound. If we have additional dispensaries, we're going to have more drug dens like these to deal with in our city. No one's cleaning up these areas. These areas are very under the radar. No one sees them, but they're there, and there's lots of them. I don't want to deal with any more drug dens around our town. They become very unsafe. They're all over the place. I ask you to consider our environment here in town as well as our families when you guys make your decision about additional dispensaries here in town. Thank you.
Thank you. Others, please come up.
Hello, City Council, Mayor. I'm Stuart Kriege. You've seen me before here over the last 8 months. We've had the moratorium in effect. The moratorium is being extended by staff for another 4 months and 15 days, because that's legally as long as they can, and I'm not sure if you can actually ask for an additional moratorium. State law is that you can only have an emergency moratorium for 45 days, and that can be voted on, and then the maximum limit is a year. So staff has decided to take the entire year, and during this time, we haven't had a whole lot of communication with staff. What's come up during the Planning Commission has been a lot of erroneous data. We've offered our services to try to help with this data, try to get some more accurate data. So far, the data has been provided by the two dispensaries who are operating, and the staff calling upon the other cities and seeing how they dealt with this issue. The two existing dispensaries have been around for 4 and 5 years, respectively. They were started as for-profit enterprises. They're asked by Commissioner David Foster, is this a for-profit business? The answer was yes by staff. Still, both dispensaries were voted in unanimously by this council. So we're well aware that the council is sympathetic to medical marijuana as medicine. And we're not challenging that in any way. What we're challenging is the two enough for our city? And it seems as if the council has been split, saying that two is fine for our population. population of 58,000 people. Two dispensaries is about on par. There's right now over 30 for San Francisco. It's about 600,000 people. That's one per 20,000. San Jose has a little less than a million people. Right now they have about 30 dispensaries. None of them legal. None of them being given proper sanction by their governing councils, but still opened up because right now the state of California is kind of in limbo, and it seems as if that people would rather ask for forgiveness than permission. And we've got Purple Cross and Hollister rejecting city council's ban. We've got Medileaf and Gilroy plus five other dispensaries since Medileaf has started rejecting their council's opinion, and the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeal from the Supreme Court of California has actually sided with Medileaf and allowed them to continue opening their doors until this court case in Anaheim is decided. And the court case in Anaheim is basically, in 2007, Anaheim City Council voted to ban all dispensaries. And Quality Patient Association Collective down there in Anaheim sued them. And it's been argued in front of the California Supreme Court back in September. A decision was supposed to come out early this January. And actually what happened was the judge asked for a brief from both arguing parties to determine what their definition of the word establishment was in Prop 215 passed 13, 14 years ago by Citizens of California. So the cities right now, Calistoga just said we're waiting on what Anaheim is doing. Santa Clara is saying the same thing. And basically what their decision is, can we have a ban? And it's looking like you cannot have a ban. What was reported by the judge was saying it's like using a shotgun to kill a fly. It's too large of an ordinance that doesn't allow for the citizens of California to have what they're legally right to, have the right to. So this is not going to affect your city council, our city, as much because we do have an ordinance. We are not banning it completely. We have two dispensaries. So I don't think we need to wait to see what that case is doing. So I'm a little perplexed by staff when they say they need more time. They had something present to the Planning Commission, which the Planning Commission could make a vote on, and yet they don't have any to present to city council. And they're using the maximum allowed legal time that they can take. So why are we here? What is going on? We haven't heard any of the problems that staff is trying to work through. Staff has not contacted us, who have a completed application approved by the city attorney saying that we've met all the state and local legal requirements. So here we are. We've met all the state and local legal requirements. We have a city that has been a forefront of this movement for the last 10 years. We have two existing dispensaries, which have been operating for 4 or 5 years now, not one call to city services, not the fire department, not the police department, not a report, a written report, but not even a complaint call. And we talk about drug dens here, and that's obviously a fear amongst the community, but we just heard how there's 50 drug dens selling alcohol from the clock tower to the ocean. So what we're talking about here is, do we need three? Do we need a third dispensary? And that's kind of what I would like to, looks like I'm running out of time here.
You are.
But I would like to kind of sum up by saying what we offer is affordability. And no monopoly. Maybe the other members of my collective, we have 16 of us here who showed up today, 16 people that could have jobs in this community on this rainy day who don't because of this 8-month delay. So hopefully affordability, bringing the price down, which the two collectives have chosen not to do. They've had ample opportunity. They're still above street value prices. Affordability, no monopoly, and a little justice to the people that live in your community who've been forefront of this issue for many years. Thank you for your time.
Good afternoon.
Hi, Council, Mayor. My name is Peter Weilberger. I am the co-applicant for the Westside Medicinal Cannabis Collective, along with Stuart Kriege. I'm just going to make a brief presentation here. Oops, it's my shopping list. So we are being very patient. Essentially, I know that we can collaborate with the city, with law enforcement, the Planning Commission, and the council to create a modified ordinance that includes elements that would provide for the benefit of both or all. Cynthia Matthews suggested that the council is partners with local businesses and entities in the within the city. The medical marijuana community is one of those entities that would like to partner with the city, and you know we are reaching out, and I know you have been receptive through the years, and we certainly appreciate that and want to move forward in the same vein. But I feel that overly restrictive ordinances send the wrong type of message and an inconsistent message. If we are trying to be progressive or at least get past some of the old stereotypes and outdated beliefs and ideas, we need to keep moving in that direction. Any implication that dispensaries are a nuisance, and that comes up again and again, I think it's something that just perpetuates these outdated beliefs. I don't know if there, you know, like Stuart has just said, is there any evidence that these are, in fact, nuisances, or is it just an unfounded fear? So, okay, well, please work with us. We know we can collaborate with you, and we will be in contact.
Let me suggest that people are coming up. Do keep your eye on that little thing, because when it turns amber, you got 30 seconds, and that's time for maybe one concept, not three things still left on your list. Pick the most important one once that goes off. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Council.
Good afternoon.
Some people learn from their mistakes. Smart people learn from other people's mistakes. That's what my dad told me when I was growing up. We had the luxury of the luxury of actually formulating a case study on best practices on dispensaries, and we have Los Angeles to help us out with that. What came out this morning was a 9-3 vote. The LA City Council imposed strict restrictions on location and operations of dispensaries. That's going to eliminate over 500 dispensaries. Right now, that's going to bring them to about 70 to 150. LA's got 4.45 million people. That gives a ratio of one dispensary per 27,000. Right now we have 58,000 people, so that right now puts us at two dispensaries. I think we should stay where we're at. The dispensary limitation and ordinance said that they have to be 1,000 feet from schools, problem areas, sensitive areas such as parks and libraries. I believe planning department said 600 feet. We'll take it. Santa Cruz has always been sort of smart, trailblazer. He's right. We've been very lenient on the marijuana dispensary sort of movement to begin with, but now we have to be smart. If right now we had the luxury of alcohol foresight, we'd say, okay, we can eliminate all those problem alcoholic beverage entities or establishments, and we wouldn't have to backtrack. Right now, we should be smart. 9-3, they voted. Basically, in addition to the 1,000-foot restriction, they said that the dispensaries have to cover the city's cost of monitoring. The city officials are studying those costs to expect the fees. Just be prudent. I think right now, one of the biggest things we can ask is, what are the other two dispensaries doing? What are their financials? Do they have the permits? Income statements, tax statements, how are they running? Are they running for profit, like you said? Probably. But you know what? They serve the need. Do we need another dispensary? LA right now brought down their number from over 800 to now 70. Proportionally speaking, we're exactly where we need to be.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I'm pausing the tape. You're listening to the Santa Cruz City Council's discussion of a ban on medical marijuana dispensaries for the next 4 months, or actually an extended moratorium on applications for the third time. And I think there is some question as to whether it's a legal move. You're supposed to do it once for 45 days, and the second time you can do it for up to 9 months. But if you choose for a lesser time, then I don't know. Can you do it a third time for a longer time? I don't know.
Who's going to sue them?
You know, but in the studio with me is Craig Canada and Anita Henry talking about this issue of, you've got these people who are using coded terminology. You know, be smart like L.A. What they mean is be repressive like L.A. Now, while Anita and I probably disagree, we do disagree on, you know, the value of free enterprise, whether it's going to actually lower prices or not. I think there's very little, we might not disagree, Anita, that these kinds of arguments are being used saying, be smart, you don't need to open up no medical marijuana dispensaries because there's enough already, aren't really getting to the issue. The issue that you have is there's not accessibility right now.
See, I would agree that there are not enough outlets for people to have access to care. I believe that.
Right.
I would like to see more dispensaries. I would just like there to be some sort of oversight. I don't like the idea that they are businesses and that they're exploitive of the sick. The people who are really sick and use it as medicine.
For sure, but these people don't care about that. Absolutely. They don't want marijuana dispensaries,
that's
period.
That's right. You're right.
And they're going to use your arguments. They're saying, oh, they're profiteers, so close them down. The real issue is not that they're profiteers, or they go after real profiteers in the pharmaceutical industries and tobacco and cigarettes and, I don't know, all kinds of other industries where there's real profiteering going on, military, you name it. They have this bee in their bonnet about medical marijuana and marijuana of any kind. They see it as a drug.
Well, I don't like them using my arguments against dispensaries because I do think we do have a need for more outlets. I would like to see more. I would just like to see some sort of oversight.
Right. Sure. I mean, I think what you need. Well, of course, the danger with oversight is you get people like this overseeing them, and you're in trouble.
Scary.
You know, and so we don't have time to play this entire tape today. I apologize. We got some other callers. We had another issue coming in, the issue of the vets hall. And by the way, if you are concerned about the vets hall, do get in touch with Bob Patton. You can reach him through the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. I will take your call, pass on your information to him, and he will call you back in case you want to get in touch with Bob. If you want to get in touch with Anita or Craig, if you want to, shall we say, fight for some sane local medical and recreational marijuana policies that involve stopping profiteering, stopping the drug hysteria, stopping the police harassment and persecution of marijuana users, then you can do so by contacting perhaps you, Anita, at MedX. Is that
they
possible?
Can contact me at 425-3444, and that's 24 hours. You can leave a message, and I'd be happy to call anybody back.
Give us that number again.
425-3444.
425-3444, 425-3444 for action against drug hysteria. And the other number is for action to reopen the Veterans Hall and support vets who are trying to do that. And we never really got a clear answer on how Tim Bratton is involved in
all
this.
Well, he made a good point. I will call the Board of Supervisors because that's a very important building.
And the Board of Supervisors can be called, but only during business hours.
Well, that's when I'm most functional, and I will call them.
I agree with you. It's a beautiful building, and I think it should be, you know, it's an important building. But those are the people that told me I couldn't use their restroom.
Well, that's a personal issue, but that building...
Oh, it gets real personal when you've got to go, believe me.
Well, I think it was Tim Bratton who probably told you couldn't use the restroom.
But that building has kind of become like a mini community center. That's how I see it.
He's not appointed by the vets. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's okay. I just think it's a very important building.
Again,
to the vets and to the community.
So the number to call, you can call the Supes directly during business hours. You can call if you want to help with the vets organizing around this issue. Call 423-HUFF, 423-4833. And if you want to help organize in the community, to legalize marijuana, to stop the city and county harassment of marijuana users, dispensaries, prosecution of people.
And if you're one of the 160 people.
Call Anita at 425-3444.
Correct. And if you're one of the 160 people that received a citation that's marijuana related, please give me a call and let's see what we can do to stop the madness.
And I'm going to continue playing this tape on Sunday when I'll be coming back at 9:30 in the morning, maybe a little before, to finish this up. And of course, I don't know if you're ready for a second bite of the apple here, Anita. We're ready for you, for sure, and you too, Craig, if you're up for it, to come in to discuss this issue further. I would like to also get some other folks involved. Maybe I can get Roger Mensch to come in. He's called in before, and he's become more accessible. He's the fellow who ran the Hemporium. I think he still does, although I'm not sure how active it is. That's a marijuana distribution center up in Felton. He has been charged with multiple felonies, resulted in, I guess, a bad Supreme Court decision at the California level, which in essence, a lot of people don't know this, it makes it illegal for anybody to open any kind of dispensary that isn't a collective or a cooperative, which means all the clubs in California are largely illegal at the present time, which to me is preposterous.
Or a caregiver.
It's entrapment.
You know, and that's Bob Lee. He's prosecuting Roger Mensch under this theory, or was, and I guess now it's been taken up by the Santa Clara authorities. And similar concerns are being voiced, I guess. I don't know Supervisor Neil Coonerty's approach is on this, but he has been critical of the Boulder Creek medical marijuana dispensary. It's not that, you know...
And you got the city attorney harassing the one down in Capitola, the delivery service.
And
Ferrisoni.
So what we have is we have reefer madness, drug hysteria, being fueled by this kind of take-back Santa Cruz drug den mentality that is really, I think, blaming the wrong people for the real problems that we have, a lot of which are economic problems. We're in the middle of a deepening depression. Potential commercial property foreclosure crisis is coming up soon. And... of course, unemployment is continuing. I guess it's slightly less, but it's, you know, when more businesses close down locally, it's going to rise more. So we have a real crisis, and I think some people are looking for scapegoats. This is one of them. And the argument that, well, you know, alcohol is a, you know, if we'd known about alcohol, we would want to, you know, stop alcohol outlets and limit them in the same way that some people want to limit medical marijuana or recreational marijuana. That was tried. Alcohol was prohibited for, you know, 13 years, 14 years nationally. They called it prohibition. You may remember you may have read about it. It's true. It did reduce some kinds of alcohol problems, but it created a lot of other problems, and the decision of a lot of people was that that was not a good idea. I'm not. We can talk about that another time. I have about 3 minutes left in the show, and a waterlogged Uncle Dennis has just staggered in with his usual musical trivia and probably his alcoholic beverages. Why don't you have some marijuana beverages? I suppose because you're afraid of being arrested.
Robert, one thing that I was told the reason to extend the moratorium is because it's so new that they somehow forgot to include WAM in all their regulations. They have no provision for collectives. And so they've got to figure out how they're going to fit WAM into all this. And I assume that they're going to make it illegal for anyone to have a collective or delivery service.
See, I don't think they're going to include WAM because WAM owns a mountain. We forget that.
Well, Valerie asked them at the Planning Commission meeting. She said, what about us? Just when they told her they weren't interested in anything she had to say. After that, she said, what about WAM?
Well, I mean, I think WAM has a
Planning Commission.
WAM has a privileged position in this. But the question, you know, the Planning Commission has been sitting on this moratorium for the last 7 months. The idea that they haven't had any time is preposterous.
Well, I guess we should be grateful they just didn't ban them.
Well,
outright.
That I suppose, although what we really need is an active community, both for the vets and against the drug war and for homeless civil rights.
And maybe even to deal with
the question of playing too much rock and roll music that's completely out of date on Free Radio Santa Cruz. But you're going to have to take that up with Uncle Dennis, who is coming up with his own From the Cream to the Dregs. And actually, that show, as I said before, is very accurate considering the cream is going out. And Uncle Dennis's show is coming in. And thank you very much for listening to this edition of Bathroom Spears Broadsides. My thanks to my guests, Anita Henry and Craig Canada. Craig is online at www.palmspringsbum.org, correct?
That's right.
All right. Anita can be found not online, but she can be reached at, she's a MedX distributor at 425-3444.
Or you can send me an email at medx95060@aol.com.
You can catch this show. It'll be archived at www.freakradio.org, probably in about 2 days. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Thank you.
Thank you for having me, Robert.
On the turning away from the pale and downtrodden and the words they say which we won't understand, don't accept that what's happening is just a case of all the suffering, or you'll find that you're joining in the turning away. It's a sin that somehow light is changing to shadow and casting its shroud over all we have known.
tuned to Free Radio.